I have to have things in black and white. I can't have a maybe, because I have to know what's going to happen.
One topic, two chicks, three points of view. What does it really mean to do time?
Police emergency.
Life in prison.
Keeping people safe is the first duty of government.
Oi, oi.
You can get spies, you can get heroin, you can get crack.
It is criminality, pure and simple.
I'm facing time.
It's normal hiring ex-common scars.
I don't know how long it could be, 4 years, 10 years.
There's not one solution.
Could be life.
Who cares for the men behind these doors?
Bird.
Welcome to Season 3, Behind Bars with Bird. This season we'll be recording exclusively from different prisons across the UK. For our fifth episode, we've teamed up once again with HMP Pentonville, which is a Category B local remand prison in London for adult males. This time we spoke to staff and prison residents who are part of Pentonville's new neurodiversity wing. There are only two specialist wings of this type in the UK, so we felt really grateful to get the opportunity to find out more. Staff shared their experience of adapting practice to cater for specialist needs, noticing a huge reduction in violence across the whole estate and gaining empathy for those in their care. Residents serving time, whose diagnoses ranged from ADHD, autism, PTSD and dementia, felt supported and listened to, whilst being able to benefit from a sensory room, specialist support groups and our favourite, Dobby the therapy dog. Overall, the wing takes a rehabilitative and kinder approach with exceptional results. Neil Fraser, the custodial manager for the wing, shares with us how it all began.
Originally started with Ruth Hipwell, Governor Hipwell. She has always had this thing in her head about having a neurodiverse unit, and G1 was being refurbished, damp and cockroaches and all that sort of thing. And she just went to the number one governor and said, can I have that for this neurodiverse unit?
This is an example of staff finding opportunities inside of prisons, even with limited resources. The neurodiversity wing doesn't have any formal funding, and much of the facilities on the wing have been donated by charities and through Neil's advocacy with different organisations.
Originally we only had, I think we brought 12 down, people down. And it was a massive learning curve for everyone, including the prisoners, because they were, you know, we were knocking on the door and we were speaking politely and calmly to them and things like that. And then we had the certain prisoners who were still causing a lot of aggravation and were very aggressive. And the staff, I sort of asked the staff just to be very supportive of the prisoners and not come down on them too hard. So whereas on the normal wings you speak to people for a little while, then it's force comes into it, whereas this was like force is the last thing in your mind. And it was very difficult to start with, certainly with one or two prisoners that we had. They were very, very challenging and we didn't really have a lot of training, so it was very difficult to come from being a normal prison officer and looking at people with a completely different mindset. But slowly but surely we've had some training. We had a psychologist and the doctor and the speech and language therapist. They arranged a day's training to all the staff that that had asked to come and work with us.
Neurodiversity is highly prevalent in the prison estate. For example, an estimated 25% of people who offend have ADHD. That's 5 to 10 times more than in the general population. Despite these high figures, ADHD remains critically underdiagnosed in prisons. Neil tells us more about what that's like on the wing.
Yes, and the mindset change for the staff, the reason it's been so hard, is because these guys on the normal wing are the ones who are banging and crashing, they're smashing their cell up, they're self-harming, they're attacking staff because their senses are getting overloaded. And as soon as someone opens the door, it's crash, out they come. So they then get tarred with a brush of they're violent, they're a drain on resources, they shouldn't get what other people are entitled because they're the ones causing all the problems. Whereas down here, you take an officer from C-Wing, for argument's sake, put him down here. Now, I want you to talk to him, I want you to calm him down, I want you to knock on the door, I want you to give him earplugs so he doesn't, his the noises don't affect him. And that takes some getting used to. And the staff have been amazing.
There is evidence to suggest that ADHD is linked to early criminality and an increased likelihood of reoffending, which is why this unit is so important. People that reside on it have the chance to access appropriate interventions while serving time. Neil has ambitions for the wing to enable people once they leave.
I'd love to have the situation that each one of the prisoners, when they get transferred, has got a full dossier, a passport, that we can transfer them out to wherever they're going and the next prison can take that on.
If you've never stepped foot inside a prison, we can tell you that it's quite the experience. It's noisy and you can hear different conversations and shouting from each wing and floor. Even throughout this episode, you can hear how noisy it is. This is why things like the sensory room are so important for neurodiverse prisoners as respite from sensory overload.
A sensory room is a therapeutic space designed to aid relaxation, usually through special lighting, music and objects. In Pentonville, an existing cell has been repurposed so people can go inside to have a safe space or engage in activities which may help them de-escalate and also prevent outbursts. Having this room promotes self-care, provides a nurturing environment, increases resilience and recovery. Residents also have access to a small kitchen, tables on the landing for group work, and more time with staff.
Every Tuesday, as seen on the visual calendar on the wing, residents and staff are visited by Dobby, the therapy dog, who's an adorable whippet. It's safe to say that that's one of the highlights of the week.
We can't help but think that some of the techniques employed on the wing would benefit the wider prison population. The visual calendar, yoga classes, the sensory room, and a kinder regime. When we spoke to staff, they mentioned that only the most severe cases end up on this wing. So there are still people with additional needs in the general prison population in Pentonville who could benefit.
Just 1 year into establishing the neurodiversity unit, staff on the wing and in the wider estate have reported a reduction in violence, which is no surprise. Prisoners with ADHD are 8 times as likely to be involved in aggressive incidents compared to those without. This is compounded with 9% of the prison population in the UK having an autism diagnosis.
We had a couple of YA lads who would start a fight in an empty room, to be fair. But they were the ones who are, you know, they're the ones that are encouraged by their friends, in inverted commas, to go and assault people and that kind of thing. And we've had one or two of them down here. One's since been transferred, one's still on G-Wing, who haven't had any problems since spending 6 months down here. We had another fellow who got transferred here from Swellside after setting fire to cells in Swellside, came here, set a massive fire to his cell on D-Wing, and people who were there said they couldn't believe he came out alive. Spent a while in the CSU, we brought him down here and he got released with a CV, he'd done a barista course and a couple of other courses that he did.
Now let's hear from some of the people with lived experience of prison and neurodiversity. Here's Zach sharing his experience of being diagnosed and what it's like on the wing.
I'm 20 and I've been on G-Wong for about 2.5 months, I think. I was in a review and they told me that there's this wing called G1 that's for neurodiverse people. And my mum's thought I've had it. I've had some type of problem since I was born, but I never got tested. And I got tested in here and got admitted to here, so that's how I found out about it. They gave me a screening, which is like a long quiz, and just filled it out, and yeah, they came back saying I had this and that. ADHD and Asperger, I think, was what I was getting. Just took it on the chin, really. I don't think the same way. I've got two brothers, and I don't think the same as them, so I know there's some in, but it's just took it on the chin, really. It's not really anything to stress about, just who I am. Can't change it. I don't like taking meds. I don't like suppressing things that will come back twice as strong as I'm suppressed, so I try to restrain from taking meds. when I can. In terms of when I get outside, getting help, I don't know. I'm kind of a person that prefers to just deal with things on my own and not make problems for other people, which is good and bad. I've seen both sides of it. But if I do need help, I will go find it. But one, I'm going to need a lot of adjusting when I get back outside.
We asked Zach how his diagnosis impacts him in the prison setting.
I have to have things in black and white. I can't have a maybe, because I have to know what's going to happen. And if I don't, then I'll start trying to think of various ways of what will happen in different circumstances. So yeah, that's wrong with me. I have to have things in black and white. I didn't enjoy school. It's quite disruptive. I hanged around with the wrong people. I got put in alternative education, which is a bit better. It's a bit more freedom. I don't like rules, purely because I don't like someone telling me what to do. So yeah, I didn't really behave in school, but I was academically smart on my own rather than in school. This is my first time getting in trouble with the police. Was it a shock? Not really. Kind of expected it. Kind of didn't want to really think about it. Obviously it sat at the back of my mind, but when you have your house kicked in at 6 a.m, it's not really the nice wake-up call.
Zach shared his point of view on the difference in staff who work on the unit compared to the wider prison population.
It's a lot more relaxed, and considering it's one landing, staff are a lot more available to deal with problems, whereas if you're upstairs, you've got one officer per 50, 60 people. It's a lot easier for them to micromanage and get around and cater to people's needs, have a one-to-one chat if they need a chat, or something like that. It's a lot more groups, you're at your cell a bit more. Yeah, they're very lenient on like you coming out your cell if you're having a bad time or something's happened or this and that. They're a lot more caring, I think is the right way to talk about it, because back when I even, you had one officer, and if the officer had time to have a chat with you, then you'd have a chat with them, but other than that, you wouldn't have a chat. And it's bang up over there 23 hours a day, so over here it's a lot more relaxed, a lot more calm, and don't really see many problems. I speak to the officers a lot, because I don't really trust telling certain things to people on this landing as much as they're relaxed people. I don't really want to go sharing my private problems with someone that's down here. I'd rather share it with a member of staff, so if there was a problem they could bring it up. If I keep it cooped in, I'll end up lashing out, so I have to speak to staff. So.
As you can imagine, entering prison for the first time is extremely daunting. Zach shared what it was like for him.
I self-isolated for a while, purely because I don't really want to get into a problem with someone. Slowly but surely made my way out of that box. I had to adjust quite a lot and found some people on my landing that I was alright with and hanged around with them a bit. And then it kind of smoothed out, but at the beginning it's tough. It's a lot to take in, especially for your first time. I think helping people that first come in is a big step, as much as they put you on an act when you first come in. I don't think it's enough. Coming in to look at someone, just making sure they're okay for 2 seconds and enough, that's not enough. I think you should be given a support worker that you can call on, and given that they're there, or say you have someone else who's filling in for them on the day, should be able to come up and have a chat with you, because it was quite tough adjusting to a 24-hour bang up when I've been outside the whole time. So when you have that liberty taken away for the first time, it's daunting, very daunting.
It was clear that Zach was really mature, and we learnt a lot from him regarding coping mechanisms he employs in prison.
Got a DVD player, I have my DVDs, I watch a lot of anime shows, have my movies, got music, I play on my DVD player. Got colouring books, I've got books I read, so my parents have been quite helpful with that, and obviously I thank them all the time. and they send me money, and I tell them, don't send me money, focus on the bills, that's important. And they keep saying no. But in terms of time to myself, music, I listen to quite peaceful music compared to a lot of other people who listen to a lot of rap music. I prefer peaceful music, particularly like Japanese music, because it's quite calming and relaxing. Sometimes I prefer to just break down. It depends on how I'm feeling and what's going on in the day. I'm dealing with a lot, so at the moment I tend to just break down and just try and get it out so that it's out and it's not kept in. Then I'll play some music and just try and calm down, but at the moment, just trying to chill out and calm things down in my head, because like I said, being told maybe winds me up a lot. Being told it 12 weeks in a row definitely winds me up.
We asked Zach if there was any improvements he would make to the unit.
Things I particularly like is there's a lot of games you can play down here, so that's quite fun. I'd love a table tennis table. I think a lot of people would at the same time. Things that could be improved on. To be honest, it's, as much as staff are nice, sometimes we're understaffed and we get other people from other landings. It messes up the regime because it's not treated with the same amount of care, and then people that tend to kick off and stuff like that. So having consistent staff definitely helps, because otherwise, like I said, people end up kicking off because someone said the wrong thing or someone's changed something about something else. Like someone kicked off the other day because they were refused a shower in the afternoon when they've been having showers in the afternoon for like multiple weeks, and because one person hadn't been on it for ages, they kicked off about it. So yeah, staffing, just regular staff, definitely could help, yeah.
Since there are only two units of this type in the UK, if Zach gets transferred to another prison, it's unlikely he will continue to get the same care. We asked him his thoughts on that.
It's going to be tough. I dread it because I don't know what I'd be like have I go back to a normal wing. Don't know, I won't know until time comes, really. I don't worry about it. I'll pick it up when it comes to it. I've got enough on my plate at the moment, so I try to keep worries that are a good ways away from coming up and, you know, popping up in my head.
Now let's hear from another one of our guests, Matthew. What you'll hear will be short, but we felt it important to include to be representative of the wide range of needs on this unit.
My name's Matthew. I've been on G1 since it opened. It's a really good wing. I got told that it's going to be good and it will suit my special needs. So I thought, yeah, let me give it a try. So I've got autism. Yeah, I wasn't thinking before I was doing things. And then I went to a special needs school. 1 year in hospital and 2 years in prison. I was the only one wanted to come back to prison. I didn't like it in there. The people, the inmates, they're like bullying people. The staff don't really care too much. No, but I'm looking at like 12 to 16 years. Hopefully I get a bit less. And G1's really good, yeah. Staff are more better here. Patient, yeah. They're good people. Yeah, well, I've got yoga tomorrow in the morning. I've got some yoga. Oh, Dobby. Yeah. Yeah, I like Dobby.
Yeah.
Good, he livens up the place. Yeah. I play with him, feed him. He likes getting fed. Yeah, he comes out sometimes with us. Yeah, well, likes him. Yeah.
Next up, we'll hear from Spencer, another person serving time on the neurodiversity unit.
I'm 24. I've come on the unit about 4 or 5 months ago. I was on J wing for 9 months, and then I got referred down here. Obviously, this is a neurodiverse wing, so it's for people with like ADHD, autism, and like learning difficulty. So, obviously, I was on J wing. I thought I'd come down here because of the different facilities and things like that, so I thought it would sort of help me a little bit more. I've just got ADHD, and obviously you're out a bit more. I'm red band on this ring, so I'm sort of busy, do you know what I mean? So they try and give you a job and get you out as much as you can, and been on medications as I was saying earlier. But if I don't take it, I'm a bit of a nightmare, so just 100 miles an hour.
Around 96% of prisoners with ADHD also have issues with substance use, conduct and personality disorders. Spencer talks about his experience with addiction.
Obviously, I had a bit of a drug addiction, and that's what led me to be in jail. I started selling drugs to pay for my drug addiction, so that's what's led me to jail. But because it wasn't like I was addicted to cocaine, it was more like Valium. And there are a lot of drug classes, just learning about drugs and how it affects your victims, because a lot of times you think you've never hurt anyone and you've never never hurt anyone and things like that, then you haven't got a victim, but you sort of do, you know what I mean? People who sell drugs like do have victims, you just don't really necessarily see them. And so I guess whilst you're in it, you've just got to take as much as you can get and use it to the best of your advantage, and then advance for when you do get released. Like, so
Spencer shares with us his positive experience of the wing staff.
It's brilliant, like the staff are absolutely brilliant. So with people with like autism and things like the red bands, we help out. So on a Sunday we do like kit change. So we make sure everyone's got the right clothes that fit them and the essentials they need, like toothbrush, razor, if they're allowed a razor, like soap, like shower gel, towels, all fresh bedding. We make sure their rooms are clean. So obviously some people can find it hard, sort of, where they've had care on the outside and then they come to prison. It's not always, the staff always focusing on the safety and the welfare of all people, do you know what I mean? So we sort of help to make sure they're living at a good standard and things like that. So like do the staff as well. They do cell checks every week. Make sure everyone's got everything, TV, kettle, telephone. The staff are brilliant. Like Mr. Fraser, like Garrett, like you spoke to Garrett. All the staff, I think they've had a bit of extra training to be down here as well. So, yeah, like, it's a very good wing, and they do get supported a lot more than if you was on another wing. So it's very beneficial for people with like neurodiverse needs. You know what I mean?
A red band prisoner means someone who is trusted by staff to help out others on the wing and is given a higher level of privileges. Spencer tells us more about his role.
I think understanding people's needs and being more aware, like especially aware of people and how other people feel and think and other people's needs. You know? Looking after people, do you know what I mean? Like I'm very good. Like I wake up in the morning, I make sure my bedding is washed once a week, all fresh. Do you know what I mean? Like everything's nice and neat for me. Like, but some people, I guess, like they need a bit of extra hand. So I think you get a bit of a kick out of it anyway for helping people. Do you know what I mean? And it makes you feel a bit better at the end of the day, and it keeps you busy.
We mentioned earlier things which help prisoners cope with their needs on the unit. Let's hear directly from Spencer about his experience. First up, the sensory room.
Loads of lights, loads of like touching things on the wall, and like there's bean bags, there's wallpaper with fish on it and things like that, and there's also a projector with loads of objects on there, like fish, the sea. They've got sounds, so you're using a lot of your senses for people who do have like sensory needs. It probably fulfills a lot of their, you know what I mean, fills a lot of their needs, like, so it probably calms them down and sort of brings them down a little bit.
Spencer spoke about Dobby the therapy dog.
I know from watching them that they feel a bit like comforted, and they just feel comforted, and they like play with the dog. They got a frisbee out in the yard, so the dog's running around it. I think it just makes them a bit happy, do you know what I mean? It's a bit of a bit of something from the outside world, do you know what I mean? So, I think it's good that they're going to go in.
Finally, let's get Spencer's point of view on potential improvements for the wing.
Things like probably like cooking classes. I think that would be a good one for people. Like because you're also teaching them life skills for when they get out as well. More drawing, like obviously more drawing classes and things like that. Like, yeah, a bit more interaction. Like you've got the sensory room, but I think more classes and things like that. And obviously it does restrict everyone who is down there because of upstairs and the other prison, because there's so much gang related stuff. And there's just, it's not a very nice environment, do you know what I mean? Like, so it does also affect us down here. So, but they literally do it the best they can. Everyone's out every day. Everyone is looked after so well, do you know what I mean? Like,
during our visit, we also spoke to members of staff working on the neurodiverse unit. As we've heard, the residents have really positive things to say. We wanted to know what being a member of staff is like on the unit. Here's Officer Elstub, an Unlocked graduate, sharing her thoughts about providing a supportive environment.
Big part of it is like, we know that obviously a lot of the prison population would, like, on paper fit the criteria. So a lot of it is identifying the people that don't cope as well on the standard wings and getting them down here, and trying to make sure that they're like in a supportive environment where they're less likely to be victimised or taken advantage of by other people. And then The ones who say do fit the criteria but are able to cope, then we'll try and like leave them. If they're doing well, then no need to like bring them down just because they meet criteria. Like, a lot of people speak to them and they're like, actually I'm doing all right, moving them.
Here's Officer Olen sharing his experience of PTSD and how empathy is the key to supporting people in his care.
So I served in like Afghanistan and Iraq and stuff like that, so I kind of understand different kind of needs, if it makes sense. From the side of these, from like trauma to your autism, so I can kind of understand. So you have to give them a bit more patience compared to someone upstairs, and just the way that they kind of react. So for instance, when you're, let's just say, a couple of landings up and someone's coming up to you and they seem kind of like passive aggressive, you might be thinking in your head to react different to someone down there. So when you kind of know they've got complex needs, you will know how to deal with them, if that makes sense.
As Neil mentioned earlier in the episode, the staff have had some training, but this can vary depending on an officer's pathway into being a prison officer. Either way, all the staff we spoke to believe that more training is essential when caring for complex needs.
Well, I've done slightly different training because I've done the Unlocked graduate scheme. So we did like the standard part training, then we also had extra sessions on like working with older prisoners, working with neurodiverse prisoners, with transgender prisoners, with like different minorities in prison. So I did have a bit, but still, like, training is very different to doing it in real life. So it helped. Like, we've done bits and pieces, like when we've come down here, like they try and do sessions like every couple of weeks. I think a lot of the time is not even necessarily formal stuff, but when we just get a chance to like sit and talk about different prisoners naturally in depth, like drawing across all our knowledge and like all our experiences with one prisoner, figuring out what it is that works and what doesn't, like even without having like someone telling us stuff, like if we can sit down and be like, I noticed like when I did this he really didn't like it, when I did this it actually really worked well, like learning from each other more so than necessarily learning from like a professional, I think works really well.
As part of their specialist training, staff on the wing were invited to take part in an autism reality experience, which essentially simulates what it might be like for someone with autism and or ADHD to enter the prison. Neil tells us more.
I had a day of, it was autism in the morning and ADHD in the afternoon, so it was just telling us what it is and how it manifests itself when it comes out with the prisoners. And then we had the autism bus come. That was amazing. I thought it was going to be a big bus, but it turned out to be like a Morrison's van type size. And you go in and you have an experience. You put some weird glasses on, some headphones and some gloves. You go in and there's a video. And it's the prisoner coming into reception in a prison. And it changes your perception. So you get all this, basically a sensory overload, and then the fellow that's in there, he asked you then to do some tasks, and such simple tasks. There was a load of Scrabble letters. And you got to try and spell a word, or there was a load of keys that were put in, find two red keys. But you've got all this noise and banging and smells come in, and it must be horrendous.
Officer Olen reflects on the wing and the facilities 1 year on.
I just believe it's a good asset to have. We're helping people with complex needs, and sometimes people do need to be taken slightly out of that environment to kind of better themselves and for rehabilitation. I think it's probably one of the best things the prison service has done.
Untreated, ADHD alone costs an estimated $11.7 million annually in the criminal justice system. If ADHD is recognised in prisons and managed appropriately, there could be a reduction in criminality of 32% for men and 41% for women, which is startling when you think about it.
Let's hear again from Neil about next steps and advice for other prisons who want to get started.
To get it started, you need a landing. We're just lucky now. We can have 50 people in total on here. You could just have a landing of just to start it off, and you take your most needy ones and put them on the landing and just start speaking to them and start treating them with extra care and support. And
although we've visited Pentonville many times before, this visit was particularly eye-opening. It is clear that what has been started with this unit is positive, and we hope by sharing this podcast, more prisons will realise the importance of recognising and supporting neurodiversity across the prison estate.
It will be critical in neurodiversity strategies across the criminal justice system to offer more targeted support, which starts as early as possible in school to prevent poor outcomes for young people.
Young people need access to screening so they can get diagnosed, increase their understanding of themselves and of others.
Furthermore, there needs to be appropriate neurodiversity care pathways. Once someone has a diagnosis, they need support to treat and manage.
Improved awareness from teachers, parents and caregivers will be critical in improving outcomes for young people. This can be accelerated by appropriate training, access to treatment and continuity of care.
A big thank you to the staff and residents of HMP Pentonville for sharing their stories with us. And thanks to Neil Fraser for hosting us.
A special thanks to 21 and Sensory for our wonderful episode artwork, and to Pete Eumanns for sharing some valuable resources with us. If you or anyone else has been affected by the issues raised in this podcast, please check out links and sources in the show notes.
Expect social justice info, stats and prison insights from Bird on Twitter, Instagram and TikTok at Bird Podcast. You can also find out more from our website, birdpodcast.co.uk. If you enjoyed the episode, please follow and review on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts.
See you next time on Bird.